Hello, my name's Matthew Horspool, and welcome to Braillecast, connecting the dots for Braillists everywhere. Coming up this time, the second part of our exploration of Braille in Pacific Island countries, with a particular focus this time on Braille in Samoa. Last time on Braillecast, we heard from Ben Clare about the challenges facing Pacific Island countries in terms of access to Braille, and Ben's experiences of visiting those countries to deliver training. One of the larger Pacific Island countries is Samoa, and thanks to a substantial fundraising effort, the Samoa Blind Persons Association were able to send three observers to the 8th General Assembly of the International Council on English Braille, which took place in neighbouring New Zealand at the end of May. One of those observers was Ari Hazelman, who works as the Disability Inclusive Coordinator at the association. He spent a few extra days in New Zealand after the General Assembly to find out more about blindness services there, and during a rare break in his busy schedule, he generously agreed to be interviewed for Braillecast. I started by reflecting on the General Assembly that had just taken place and invited him to offer a Samoan perspective.
Talofa lava from the beautiful independent state of Samoa. It was a very, very mind-opener, ear-opener, and so to speak, eye-opener for Samoa, given the fact that it has been many years since Samoa has been invited to participate in such high-level discussions to do with the beautiful written code of Braille. That's due to many reasons, some of which include funding. And the way the associations have been throughout the years. But we are very extremely thankful to be involved in the discussion. And I, for one, am really thankful to have been here just to listen to how this simple six-dot cell that was invented by Monsieur Louis Braille 200 years ago have actually evolved and developed and become more dynamic for blind persons all over the world, as well as for those who produce Braille all over the world. So it's nice to know that Braille is living on in its various forms, whether it be literary Braille, whether it be hard copy Braille, whether it be Braille music, and whether it be the UEB code or the previous codes that were talked about, whether it be accessing Braille through your old Perkins or your Slayton stylus, or whether it be accessing Braille through your Braille display and embossers and all the different ways, it's nice to know that Braille still lives on and is relevant. I'm also very, very much impressed with the different work that the different people in this area do, especially Braille transcribers, and also the work of ISEB, because it's good to know that there's a council that regulates how Braille in English is actually developed. And it's good to be part of this high-level discussion. And we just hope that what we learn here would be useful and we would apply some of it, because, you'd be a miracle worker if you're able to apply all of it, but some of it to the work that we do back in Samoa.
You work for the Samoan Blind Persons Association. I understand it was not always called the Samoan Blind Persons Organization. Tell us a little bit about the history of that and what your role involves.
Okay. The Samoa Blind Persons Association had another name before that. It was called PREB, Prevention, Rehabilitation, Education for the Blind. And it was actually founded in 1991 by a sighted person who felt that he had a way of bringing together people who were blind in Samoa and teaching them various skills like independent living, sports, Braille, and so on. That went on until 2014 when he passed away. And then we decided, as persons who are blind, hang on, we have received human rights training. Samoa is now, was at the time, going to ratify the CRPD. And we felt that we as blind persons had the capacity to take over the reins and to stand on our own two feet. So that's why the Samoa Blind Persons Association, or SBPA, had its name change. And it's whereas its former board of directors was made up of mostly sighted persons, the new board was made up of persons who are blind. So we have five representatives from the blind community on the board, as well as two representatives from the sighted community, or the parents. Some of the work that we do, we actually try to teach Braille to students in regular schools and in special schools. We have a small teacher aid program where we send out teacher aides, or you'd say resource teachers, to the various schools to try and assist students who are blind and visually impaired through things like accessing their notes in Braille, or actually providing alternative formats, or just assisting them in the day-to-day class learning. We also teach assistive technology, say for example NVDA, because non-visual desktop access software, which is open source. And we also have a Braille production unit. We use the Braille Blaster software to translate materials into Braille, documents into Braille, and then emboss them. Documents include Braille notes for the children, UN-related documents like the voluntary reports for countries, government policies and laws, any other document that a blind person wishes to receive in Braille, as well as Braille menus for restaurants. So we've already had a few restaurants that we have translated their Braille menus to, and I think that's a very, very valid activity for the community, because everyone wants to access a restaurant and has something good to eat. So, you know, we hope to do more of those kinds of things. We also have a human rights component where we advocate for the rights of persons who are blind and anything to do with their accessing information, like the Marrakesh Treaty, having a Samoan language Braille code, which is a right, of course, and things like that. All of this is also represented by the Samoan government ratifying the UNCRPD. So the Samoan government ratified the UNCRPD in 2016, and therefore we are just trying to assist the government to fulfill its general obligations under the CRPD. The Samoa Blind Persons Association is one of the four subgroups of an organization called Nuonuo Lealofa, or NOLA, that translates to the Rainbow of Love, which has four subgroups, including persons with physical disabilities, persons who are deaf, and also persons who have psychosocial disabilities and intellectual disabilities, plus our association, Samoa Blind Persons Association. So yes, so that's part of my role, is to facilitate anything that has to do with ensuring that all activities of the organizations are inclusive and also accessible for people who are blind. I've worked in the Braille unit. I've actually transcribed materials into Braille, and also tried to find ways to keep Samoa up to date with the rest of the world, try to network with many people from other countries so that we could find other ways in which Samoa can remain in touch with the world and the changes that are coming up within Braille and technology and blindness issues, things like that.
And you're blind yourself and quite possibly were born prior to 1991. It seems quite strange to me to think that the organisation was only established in 1991, and it's a credit to the organisation that it's achieved so much in such a relatively short space of time. Thinking back to before the organisation was established, what was life like for blind people in Samoa at that time?
I think that question can be answered even when the organisation was established. I say that because it had to do with things like negative attitudes, whereby people actually see blind persons as objects of pity, which means that families may love the person who is blind, but they had a pitying attitude in terms of, this poor person, what will this poor person do? Or maybe this poor person cannot do a lot of things. And also, you know, general things like, you know, different words that people use to belittle or to unintentionally discriminate persons who are blind and visually impaired. So I think before the organization, there may be other blind associations that we in our generation did not know of, and do not know accurately of the work they did. But in saying that some of these cultural attitudes persisted, and once the organization developed from 1991. It was a major mission of the organization to try and bridge the gap, to try and make people understand that blind persons are first of all persons, then they're blind, and then they have their worth. Each person has their worth. Each person has their value in society. Also take into account that Samoa is a Christian country. So it's mainly trying to connect the dots and making sure that people understand that the value and what persons who are blind can achieve.
Mm. And would you say the organization's been successful in that mission? If we look at blind people in Samoa in 2024, are they viewed differently?
Yes, there's certainly a lot of awareness has been done. Certainly, many people have the... have understood that blind persons are now using technology, they're using Braille, they're using many other different ways to try and move forward in life. However, of course, these attitudes still persist because of, you know, preconceived notions, especially people from rural areas. But in saying that, when you have an awareness program, some people are like overwhelmed and they are like amazed at what persons who are blind are able to achieve. So I think it's a double-edged sword in that, yes, there has been a lot of change and a lot of awareness, but no, in the sense that there are still some preconceived attitudes that are negative, that are still going around.
Mm-hmm. Let's turn our attention to Braille, since this is the theme of the Braillecast podcast, having set that context. You said that you had a Braille production unit at the Samoa Blind Persons Association. Some of our listeners might be a bit surprised by that. I think there's a perception amongst certainly people who I speak to that Samoa is a developing country, and quite often developing countries just get Braille donated to them, and that's the only Braille that they're able to access. How would you respond to that?
Yes, at first, the beginning of our Braille production unit, all the equipment was donated, of course, through various avenues. But in terms of improving, we actually came up with the idea of actually having a formal training on how to set up our Braille production unit in 2018. That was a great success thanks to Mr. Ben Clare of Australia. He was the main person who we accredit for helping us with setting us up with the software and also making sure that our embossers at the time worked well with the software. And then talking to us on the importance of having accessible Braille documents. After that, we were actually able to contact a person from Index. Because we use the Index Everest type of embossers, and they were able to send their person, and we were able to actually have a maintenance training done on how to clean the embossers, how to disassemble and reassemble the embossers, and things that we needed to understand more about the embossers itself. So after that, we found that we could actually come up with standards on, say, for example, if a government ministry wanted their documents to be produced into Braille, we'd actually have a standard, like we'd say it's 5 tala, that's like probably $3 or $2 American, for producing one page. One Braille page is equal to 5 tala. So there, the Braille unit has become also a income generating activity for us, so that we may get extra income. Given the fact that we are a non-profit, but we believe that we are able to charge a small fee from the government to the government agencies, just so that it can keep us, pay for things like the paper and the labor and things like that, and also to upkeep or to maintain the Braille unit.
Transcribing Braille, though, is only one half of the story, isn't it? There's no point in transcribing Braille if there's no Braille readers in the country. So somebody must also be teaching Braille.
Yes, we also do that, of course, and that's one of the very challenging areas that we have, because of the fact that, first of all, when we talk about the different codes, many of the world's countries have officially adopted the UEB, or the Unified English Braille Code, and that's an area that we need to work on and keep up with, so that we'll be able to teach our students the new changes and the new rules that have been made, because we felt many times the Pacific were not consulted in the way in which these Braille codes have been made. So how do we teach that to our students? How do we teach that to our teacher aides? Given the fact that Samoa, many of them, the Samoan language is their first language, and many of these Braille terminology is very difficult to understand. So that's part of why I was here, trying to learn more about, the UEB and why it has been adopted, and so that we can find more simpler ways to try and teach our students and to keep them interested in Braille. Another challenge is that many of our students that we have now have multiple disabilities. So it may have something to do with their cognitive knowledge and how they're able to understand and how we are able to teach them Braille. So that's one of the biggest challenges. Another challenge is the lack of resources. At the moment, our government doesn't have any sort of program where students can be able to subsidize, get the equipment in a subsidized manner, or a program where we're able to partner up with an organization that can help us in terms of procurement of the Braille writers, for example, Perkins, Braillers, slate and styluses, abacuses, and all the simple tools that that we take for granted as persons who are blind who have access. So I think it's very important while we celebrate the advent of human rights and the importance of human rights, how do we make these human rights real? How do we make persons who are blind enjoy reading Braille and understanding Braille and learning Braille if we don't have the proper resources to continue to do that in the 21st century?
Mm. And not only the procurement of new things, but also the repair of existing things. You were saying before we started recording this that you were having real problems repairing Perkins Braillers. And so even though you have the Perkins Braillers, there's a shortage of them that are working.
Yes, indeed, because that has to do with the climatic conditions. Samoa is a tropical island state. Now the heat has gone up to 36 degrees. So you can imagine how, and you know, even the children carrying them around, and sometimes the Perkins Brailler gets hit onto a wall or it falls down. You know, our school buildings are not that ideal as you would have them here in more developed countries. So it's all of that. But I think the positive thing is that my experience, especially with working with people like Mr. Ben Clare, and also people like Ms. Chantal Griffiths, who has assisted a lot, is that the assistant is coming from actually persons who are blind. And that's a very positive thing. Whereas before, many sighted persons did their best to help. No disrespect to them whatsoever and sincere thanks to them. But what really gives me hope is that the help that is coming from persons who are blind, from other countries to other people like us, is very, very encouraging because we have gone through similar experiences. And that's something that has to be encouraged and is something that has to be commended, because you will need people who go through the same experiences and who want to make a change to be able to be in a position to assist in whatever way, whether it be financially, if not financially, technically with all the knowledge and the skills. So to me, that's something very great. I also want to say also the development of open source software is a very big enabler for developing countries. What comes to mind is software like NVDA, Non-Visual Desktop Access. That has enabled me to do my work in sending emails, in doing, you know, in editing my Braille documents through Braille Blaster, which is another free. I don't know, words are not enough for me to thank the developers of all these open source screen readers, because they're not only breaking barriers for us who are blind, but they're also breaking barriers for those who are sighted, because those who are sighted have a kind of conception that, or kind of belief that, oh, you need specialist software, and that, you know, and how do we get that? How do we install that? It must cost a lot of money. But when you, for example, I went into a computer shop before I left Samoa and taught them how to install NVDA. And they were like, okay, so the next blind person who can come into this shop, we're able to assist them. So that can also be the case for Braille open source software. I realized that it takes a lot of money and a lot of financing and a lot of financial effort to develop all of these software. But for developing countries, open source software is the way to go.
Reaching blind people in developed countries is, as far as I'm concerned, fairly easy. If you're blind, you're generally diagnosed by a doctor who will register you of some description, pass your details on to the local authority who will provide services or something along those lines. In Samoa, how easy is it for the Samoan Blind Persons Association to actually find the blind people who need Braille teaching, whether they're children or adults?
Okay, we have various ways, one of which is the referral system, as you have alluded to, in terms of either the hospital or either the service providers, other service providers who have done awareness programs into the community. And also sometimes the parents just come or the family members just come and identify themselves. But of course, it can be a challenge having a good, robust referral system, and also how that referral system works into the government system and the school system. But mostly we find our persons who are blind through, yes, so that referral system, and also through surveys when we go out into the community, and also school and home visits. That's how we find, and also some of our awareness programs. So we may have programs like on gender-based violence, and then someone registers. We register using the Washington group of questions. So we say, do you have difficulty in seeing, or, you know, and then people are able to identify themselves. There's also now, since the government has been able to start a disability benefit scheme in 2021, we have found that more and more families are now willing to disclose the situation of their family member who's blind or visually impaired, because they know that they're going to get the benefit. So that in a way has really strengthened and helped us in terms of providing more data and increasing our database. But collecting actual data and finding the students, finding those who need proper support is still a challenge, especially in Braille. We also rely on, you know, for example, there's a optometrist in Samoa who also provides information about a person's sight. We also have the Samoan Eye Clinic, the National Eye Clinic. So they can also provide testing, vision screening for persons. So it's after that, after we've established the type of vision loss that they faced, is that we try to decide on whether to teach them Braille or not.
And I think probably the final thing that I would really like to talk about, and probably the elephant in the room that we perhaps ought to have talked about a long time ago, is we're conducting this interview in English. Your English is very good, and we could be forgiven for thinking that the English of most Samoan people is very good. To what extent is that actually the case? You're talking about teaching unified English Braille in a country where English is not the first language. So what happens now about a Samoan Braille code?
First of all, in the constitution of Samoa, Samoa has two official languages, which is Samoan and English. Secondly, Samoan and English are taught bilingually in schools. However, there is a trend nowadays that people who go to school in rural areas or in the government, most of the government schools, they may have the information in English, but they would prefer information explained in the Samoan language and in the Samoan context so that it is much more easier. So that is where the challenge lies for us in trying to introduce the concepts of UEB and also trying to find a way where which we can try to introduce the different ways of teaching UEB and the concepts that come with it to our teacher aides, our students, and our members, because most of our members come from the rural areas. They do not understand the technical terms. So, and the reasoning behind the different changes and the different developments in UEB. So I think it's the onus is upon us who are having good English in Samoa to try and convey the essence of what UEB is trying to achieve for our students and our members at large. So this is where it's very important for people like us, people like me, yourself, people like Chantal Griffiths, Mr. Ben Clare, to keep on learning from each other, imparting knowledge to each other, so that we can try to pass on the knowledge to our members at large and also those who are affected in our country, in our Samoan language, so that they're able to learn Braille and they're able to enjoy Braille. That's the main thing. Lastly, I'd just like to say that there have been improvements. Say, for example, just a few months ago, I went with a friend and I put it into my mind that I'd go and find many elevators that already have Braille keypads in many buildings. And I was very, very happy to say that probably I went into 6 to 7 buildings in Samoa that now have Braille keypads in the elevators. And when you point that out to persons who are sighted, they get very amazed. And some of them say, oh, I didn't know. I thought it was just decoration, or I thought it was just, some sort of, I didn't know it was for blind persons. So it's a very, very big eye opener for them. And it's also a very big encouragement for me that, you know, now that you have these elevator panels, lift panels that you install with Braille keypads, you're able to make your environment more accessible. So, you know, that's just a small example. But for me, it's a very profound example of how 200 years of our advocacy for Braille has panned out in terms of the manifestation of having Braille elevator keypads. So thank you, Monsieur Louis Braille. Merci beaucoup for that wonderful system you have made. And I also wish all the Braille readers of New Zealand, as well as the UK, where you come from, Matthew, all the best in advancing the cause of Braille, in promoting the cause of Braille, and in teaching the cause of Braille, because Braille has done so much for us. One last thing, we always say that in Samoan, ole ole ngana patu patu, etu tusa lavale ngana patu patu, male peni male api. Braille is just as the same as your pen and paper. And once persons who are sighted understand that, I'm sure that they would understand the importance of Braille. Thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity. And I hope I can visit the UK one day.
Ari Hazelman, thank you for this interview. It's been wonderful to catch up with you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Braillecast, the official podcast of the Braillists Foundation. You can find more Braille-related content by subscribing to Braillecast, all one word, in your podcast client of choice. Or listening to Braillecast, connecting the dots for Braillists everywhere on your smart speaker. You can also find past episodes on our website at braillecast.com. If you have comments on the podcast or suggestions of topics or guests for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. Please email help@braillists.org. You can also find the Braillists on Twitter, @Braillists, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Braillists Foundation. Finally, if you like what you've heard, spread the word. New listeners are always welcome, so if you know other people who are interested in Braille, please tell them where to find us. In the meantime, on behalf of everyone at the Braillists, thanks for listening and bye for now. The costs of producing this episode were defrayed by a resilience grant from the Social Impact Fund of the Vision Foundation and Fight for Sight. For more information, visit visionfoundation.org.uk.